and how it's going to ruin their prospects of work and employment and being valuable members of society. So then he goes on, does Richard, a national approach to dealing with cannabis does not preclude debate about drug law reform or the medicinal value of the drug. However, this should not become another opportunity for the extremes of that debate to confuse the public about the issues involved. I guess that's us on one side, the extreme of the debate. Against this backdrop, policy should be in place to discourage its use, but especially to discourage the transition to heavy and dependent cannabis use. The agreement on a national strategy opens the way for a national approach to inform the public, professionals in health, the legal fraternity and decision makers about the true nature of cannabis use and its actual impacts and how these might best be addressed. Now, just to recap on something that Dickie just says there, he says that he wants, against this backdrop, policies should be in place to discourage its use. By that I assume he means penalties for using it, but especially to discourage the transition to heavy and dependent cannabis use, which I'm taking to mean that if you get caught a couple of times, there's going to be some nasty jolt at the end of that tunnel, like the third drug offence, and you're sent off to incarceration with enforced chemical conditioning or whatever. Who the god hell knows? Anyway, so that's where we're at. Dickie Maddock is out there. Basically, he's the psychological arm of the attack. Now we've had the good benevolent government side. We're giving out all this money for stuff. We've had the nasty law enforcing side saying we're going to make that drug so fucking illegal and then we're going to kick your fucking head. And now we've got the guy saying, don't worry about them getting their heads kicked. They're the one that were bloody hijacking the debate in the first place, you know. It's probably good that their teeth are missing so they can't yell and shout and distract us from the real fact, which is that heavy marijuana use in young people causes things like psychosis and they can't get jobs and produce. That's where we're up to. Whew. Tuesday. It was a hard night. I could hardly sleep after reading that. Let's have a bit from a group called Still Thinking. Fresh meat from Melbourne. Still thinking. Bringing the show. Still. Finish your scope pack. Yeah. That was Still Thinking. Fresh meat from Melbourne. They got a little single they've sent us. They've possibly got a self-titled album, an entire one, which I'm going to try and get hold of for you and play some off. I really like that. Still Thinking. Melbourne band, 7-piece outfit. And as you can hear, lots of energy and bouncing around in there. And it was a track called Something to Bounce With. And who did we have before that? Oh, yeah. We had a group call themselves Driving South. And off their debut album, there was a track called Tumble Down. We heard there before Still Thinking. Yeah, it's a shot of a big open desert with a rusted vehicle falling apart in the middle of it. Ah, Driving South. Yeah.
Honey, have you ever wondered what we men talk about when you girls aren't around?
Besides football and sex, not much else I'd think.
Oh, really? That is so stereotyped. You are so wrong.
Oh, really? So tell me, what do men talk about?
I'll do better than tell you. I'll show you.
Show me? How?
Next Friday and Saturday night at the Star Court Theatre. Norp is putting on a show called Boys Night In. Apparently put on by some bloke, call himself the Sons of Jermaine Greer. You want to come?
Oh, I'd love to, but I'm working nights this weekend.
Oh, that's okay. It's on next weekend, the 26th and the 27th as well.
Great. I'll look forward to it.
Great. I'll pick up some tickets from the ticket centre in the morning.
Can't believe it. He's taking me to the theatre.
Boys Night In, 19th and 20th and 26th and 27th of May at the Star Court Theatre, brought to you by Norba. I can't believe I've got the last word.
Yeah.
Honey?
I still can't believe I got the last word. Gee, there's a
No break between the honeys. You're wondering what that honey was, weren't you? You want to hear that honey as well? It's a little bit in advance. It's the honey that you weren't supposed to hear for a week or so, but I'll give you a quick honey right now.
Honey?
Sorry.
You go first.
Oh, it's nothing. I was just reading here how this guy reckons that the Bell Shakespeare Company is so far ahead of the pack that he wonders why any other theatre companies bother doing Shakespeare.
That's amazing.
Oh, I don't know. It's not that amazing, really. I mean, they've been doing it for years.
No, not that. I was just going to tell you that Bell Shakespeare is performing in Lismore at the City Hall on the 8th and 9th of June.
Really? That's fantastic. We'll have to go. I'll get tickets in the morning. So which one are they doing?
The Merchant of Venice.
Ah, The Merchant of Venice. One of my favourites. Did you know that the character Shylock is considered one of the most complex characters of Shakespeare's to play?
Really? Should be a great night.
Did I ever tell you that I played Shylock in high school? Ah, Signor Antonio. Many a time and oft in the Rialto, I have rated me.
Oh, this better not go on till June.
Bell Shakespeare performs The Merchant of Venice at Lismore City Hall, 8th, 9th of June. Brought to you by Norba. There you go. That was the other one. That's later. That one's not coming for a while yet. First one's Boys Night In, that's tonight, tomorrow night, and next weekend, Friday and Saturday nights. I have another double pass to give away. I gave away one this morning to the wonderful Gwen. Should never call Gwen's Glenn. Gwen's are far more extraordinarily interesting than Glenn's, I find, personally, but that's just how, matter of taste, really, isn't it? Anyway, Gwen snapped one up this morning. And I have another one tonight, a double pass to go and see Boys Night In at the Star Court Theatre. Starts at 8 o'clock. It's supposed to be extremely funny, divulges men's secret business, all sort of stuff that blokes actually do talk about between themselves when they really do think that the women are never going to find out about it, and where they get to, where their minds go. So get along, Star Court, tonight, 8 o'clock. So if you want a free double pass, first person, 66890, there it goes right now, 277, I've got to go. I'll be back in just a minute. We'll play this one. Yes, indeed, my boyfriend's back. A little bit of the spazzies there on NIM FM 102.3. I had this big piece I was going to, I was planning on playing today, that Warwick put together over the Mardi Gras weekend, the police files, the entire police files interview with lots of police and so forth. But when I see how much news I've still got to go, I've got heaps of staff and so forth. Well, it seems that way. I don't know if I can do the whole bit, but there's one. There's a track on here he recorded out there in the wilds of Mardi Gras from Daddy Cool, who was out there entertaining the crowds in various places, and a track called Cops and Hippies, the Bumble Boogie, a bit of local real music here. Thank you so much for this, Warwick. Really appreciate your work, man.
I won't give a guarantee, but I'll almost give a guarantee that I will, or the local police, will have Nimbin a much safer place than what it is today, in a permanent way.
This next one, but I'm
going
to play it anyway.
The trust that's required to be forged to make that happen.
There was no empathy there. They weren't reaching out. They weren't like human almost. They were quite robotic in their response. And
get more police stationed here in England. encourage both the community and police to work together on some positive programs that will impact on issues like youth.
Very fearful. In fact, I said to my children, we're not going back to Nimbin until this police presence is gone. Very scary and intimidating. They were behaving like bullies. They weren't behaving in a professional manner. Mm. And so that's why I said to these girls, just run. These people are not safe people.
Reasonably unmolested during the course of the weekend, is that I'm convinced that they had them all set up for the big dessert at the end of the weekend. They're hoping to catch all the big names with a table full of buds and
have front page photos on the Herald
and take us all out. Yeah.
And the sudden disaster.
What can you say apart from Bluey? Tough luck.
Yeah.
Police don't have much way to manoeuvre when they're being pressured like that, and that sort of trust, that community trust, is always usually the first thing to suffer.
Truck full of big fellas coming out there. If I can throw you in there, look.
Yeah, babe, they're coming right now. So if you would have done it the right way, you would have been right. Where are they?
Get him on! Get him on! We figure we're within yelling distance. How many people know the words to this song? I'm now sitting here staring into a beer, shaking my head at the same old losing my fear. Stranger in my own land, can't understand how the very word Australian is just beat down. I fucking hate myself, take Aussie from my name. We raise this hell of shame forever cast in black. If you don't act the same, shall I destroy you?
Early morning train station, aching from the arthritis. This war veteran knows what a hard time is. He needs his pension, dementia and half-blinders. The reason he rides the train with no car license. So he boards with an expired ticket, has a swipe. Gets a fine because the change
he got. Yes, indeed. Stopping all stations.
Hilltop Hoods, and before that, the Spazzies with My Boyfriend's Back, and before that, some ladies called themselves Bright Red. That's what it was, a bit of indie rock girl shit stuff there, bouncing away. And before that, the wonderful Cops and Hippies Bumble Boogie from Warwick there. That was wicked. Funny, there was that guy talking. I had no idea it was me. I'm thinking, gee, those words sound familiar. He said exactly what I was thinking. And it was me. God, we think alike, him and me. Oh dear, where were we up to? The war on cannabis, the ever escalating. We had the compassionate approach to show that they cared. Then we had the iron fist to show that they didn't give a fuck. And then we had the psychological people coming out and telling us that we didn't even have a right to speak about decriminalisation because it was just diverting the debate. That was up to Tuesday. Oh, what a week. Wednesday. Treatment of people suffering from drug and alcohol abuse should not take a back seat to enforcing anti-drug laws. The Australian Medical Association, the AMA, says, who would have thought they would have come to our assistance, boys and girls? The AMA coming out to bat for us. AMA President Mukesh Haqarwal said the need to treat drug dependency and provide rehabilitation services must be given emphasis. His comments came as the Ministerial Council on Drug Strategy meeting called for tougher cannabis laws. It also endorsed a national strategy on alcohol abuse and announced it would develop over 6 months a plan to fight the growing use of amphetamines and other dangerous psychostimulants. I think we read that one before. Dr. Haqarwal said it appeared the council had placed a significant focus on law enforcement. Targeting supply lines is an important facet of tackling drug problems, he said in a statement, but the AMA stresses the need to treat drug dependency and provide rehabilitation services. Under the National Cannabis Strategy, for instance, it's important that efforts are made after funding is given to support those with cannabis-related health issues. Dr. Haqarwal said the council's approach to amphetamines appeared to be disproportionately focused on policing and supply reduction. The development of treatments for people who use psychostimulants is crucial to addressing this growing problem, and we welcome the commitment made to that in the recent federal budget, he said. Dr. Haqarwal welcomed the council's move towards new labels for alcohol to show the number of standard drinks contained within. So, the AMA was complaining that they weren't getting enough money for actual health situations. So, we flick back again. What did Tony hand the money out for? Let's have a quick look. 74 million training drug and alcohol workers on how to recognise the link between drug use and mental illness. All right. 20 million to frontline workers in Indigenous communities. 22 million on a community awareness campaign. 14 million on setting up a National Cannabis Control and Prevention Centre. 20 million to fund a network of on-campus counsellors and 25 million for an education campaign targeting alcohol use. I don't see any money there at all for actual hands-on rehabilitation, drug clinics, detoxes, any of that. It's all on the other side of the problem. How typical for our government. It's just goes on. It's nearly 20 to 2 here on the Hemp Show, the single, solitary, all by my naked self Hemp Show. It's been cold, it's been lonely, no one's popped in. The phone, however, did go off innumerable times. Thank you for everybody who keeps phoning in and asking how the goosebumps are. I was told that NIM FM got a little mention in the Northern Star today, back in the sports section, when they're talking about the Swans and the AFL and can they get up. Anyway, it says at the bottom of the article that from 5 till 6 on NIM FM 102.3, you can listen to the Men from the Demons dissecting all the latest in sport around the local region and indeed the nation. And I thought, wow, the boys are really starting to get a bit of a footprint, a bit of a cult listening out there. Apparently we can be picked up in a car park somewhere in Lismore. So there you go. Apparently the car park's packed every Friday night, 5 o'clock, it fills up with aficionados of the Demons. And everybody gets there so they can find out what's going on. Tonight there's a giveaway apparently.
I forget whether it was a falafel or a burger or... Oh, it was something. It was something edible for the person who's got the closest or at least most imaginative concept of exactly what was found in the sailor's bloodstream that had him so contrite and got him booted out of the National League like that. We've all got our ideas, our various thoughts. You have to have some convincing reasons, I would think, to have a look in at the falafel, just simply phoning up and saying Coke and hanging up again, or phoning in and saying, oh, mate, must be nice, and just hanging up. That's not good enough. You've got to have a reason, I would think. I mean, they will obviously extrapolate more deeply on this. They'll be talking about the little bit of magic that danced around the ring last night. They'll be, the night before last. It's just been one long day since Thursday. And many other things as well. There's somebody also going to be actually having a bit of a go out. I don't think it was going to be Warney this time. Although his missus has come out and had a bit of a slug at him as well. But no, there was somebody else apart from Wendell. There was someone who was going to be copping their ire. Ooh, no, the name eludes me. Tune in, 5 till 6, find out. Don't trust my memory, that's for bloody sure. I'm going to... Bit of other drug news now that we've basically got through the Australian war on drugs that's been going on since last Friday. Every day apart from Wednesday, couldn't find any major announcements. A lot of follow-ups from various people on the previous days, or just rehashes of those stories. But that was the basic thrust of the week of kick a cannabis user today. But let's move along to... this is a very sad story, this one, actually, and I'm sure that any parent out there of children of any age can relate to this and get a bit of a shiver down their spine. A teenager has died after she was dragged unconscious by the heels into a hospital and abandoned by her friends following a night of drinking and drug-taking. The comatose 17-year-old girl was dropped at Armidale Hospital's emergency department in Perth on Saturday. That's at Armidale's, a suburb of Perth. After she apparently drank alcohol, smoked cannabis and sniffed butane gas at a party in southeastern suburban Kelmscott. Sergeant Graham Clifford said he was disturbed by the way the girl was apparently treated at the party. She was found in a comatose state in a car outside the party at about 11:30. Her friends initially ignored her, but then they took her inside and put her under a shower. She failed to revive, so they moved her to the front garden area where people tried to give her water and attempted to perform CPR. She was then picked up, taken to the hospital, where we believe a passenger from the car dragged her by the heels into the triage area and shot through. Sergeant Clifford said the girl's family were naturally devastated by the circumstances surrounding her tragic death. The business of dropping her off and driving away is pretty sad, he said. We tell people if you're going to go to a party, make sure you look after each other. If anyone looks like they're getting out of hand, give them a hand, eh? Police will continue their inquiries into the girl's death today as an autopsy is done on her body. Very sad indeed. Butane gas. Can't be good for you. Isn't it just like a bit like a middle-class petrol sniffing? Ugh. About 1 in 7 truck drivers pulled over by the Victorian Police as part of a multi-state safety operation were found to be carrying illicit drugs. 1 in 7 truck drivers pulled over had illicit drugs. Victorian Road Safety Task Force Highway Unit officers, say that one fast, patrolled Wangaratta on the Hume Highway in Victoria's northeastern Cobram at the junction of the Murray and Goulburn Valley Highways in the state's north from May the 9th to the 13th as part of Operation Austrans. Concurrent operations took place in New South Wales, Queensland and South Australia. Police say that they detected 167 offences in Victoria alone. That's pretty good. The police up here only got, 93 offences of people coming from both ends into Mardi Gras. I reckon that they're looking in the wrong places. But anyway, let's just move along. Task Force Officer Sergeant Alan Tickner said the haul included logbook, illicit drug possession and driving hours offences. A bloke was caught with a shotgun. The news had just arrived. Thank you so much. He was charged, of course, with etc., etc., etc. Another driver was found with a trafficable quantity of amphetamines, while another possessed both speed and cannabis. Sergeant Tickner said, so there you go, 1 in 7 truckies pulled over was carrying some form of illicit drug. Is that interesting? Here's a really fascinating piece of research, and I'm sure you'll realise that someone's been paid a fortune to put this research through and come up with these particular answers. Listen to this. Australians who leave school early are increasingly turning to drugs and alcohol because their needs are ignored by society, a leading youth expert has said. Young males and females are increasingly turning to binge drinking and drug taking because they feel alienated. Really? In a sense, dropouts are seen as failures. Really? And they often form groups which other people feel are threatening or troublesome, and that contributes to this fear, he said. Instead, we should be trying to engage with them and try to get them involved and realise that many adults went through the same stages in their lives. Yeah, we did. And we moved here. Wonder what the young people of today are going to do. Someone got paid to do this study, to come out with this statement that young people who feel alienated often turn to drugs and alcohol. Good grief. And aren't you glad you don't live in Sao Paulo in Brazil? Because if you did, you would have been right in the middle of the most astounding week in Brazilian in contemporary Brazilian history, really. Listen to this one. Drug traffickers have launched a wave of coordinated attacks on police in Sao Paulo, leaving at least 50 people dead in one of the most violent chapters in recent Brazilian history. In at least 100 separate attacks on Friday, Saturday and Sunday, groups of criminals brandishing hand grenades and automatic weapons swept across the city, shooting members of the security forces. At least two bystanders died in the crossfire. Simultaneous rebellions broke out in 51 of the state's jails, where more than 240 guards were being held hostage on Sunday. On Sunday night, the police death toll was 35, with 32 seriously injured. At least 14 gang members have been killed. And they send 60 stormtroopers to look after a few old bloody hippies at Mardi Gras. Those guys don't know how lucky they've got it. Jesus. Here we go. Alleged international heroin trafficking syndicates be exposed in raids by the ACC in Sydney and Melbourne. That's the Australian Crime Commission. The ACC targeted four premises in Sydney, three more in Melbourne and Geelong. They seized 3.7 kg of heroin, $8,000 cash and a luxury motor vehicle. Two Sydney women, aged 27 to 46, a 30-year-old man, were charged with a range of offences, as was a Melbourne man aged 50. And I've mentioned Wendell Saylor. We won't even go into him anymore at all. Do you remember that guy, Graham Clifford Payne? He got busted very similar time to Michelle Leslie, only she got all the press. He was the pathetic little guy with the hotel room full of pharmaceuticals and a vague trace of heroin in the tip of a needle on one of the syringes, or some really paltry evidence, and he was so obviously a pathetic little user. Anyway, he was sentenced to life, to death originally, I think it was, saying, or was it life in sentence? Life in jail. But after pleading drug dependency, he had that reduced to 9 months. Barley 9 and the rest, take note, 9 months for being a dependent user, an addict. Graham Clifford Payne, a former Adelaide schoolteacher jailed for heroin possession in Indonesia, has been deported from Indonesia after completing a 9-month jail term. Graham Clifford Payne, 22, was arrested in the North Sumatran capital, Medan, last August after a routine street search by police uncovered a small amount of crystal methamphetamine hidden in his pocket. During a subsequent search of his nearby home, police found syringes and thousands of assorted prescription pills. Traces of heroin were found in the syringes, and while police alleged Payne had also had heroin in his blood. In December last year, the Medan District Court sentenced him to 8 months in jail for drug possession. Lawyer Carl Sitangang said Payne was freed from jail and immediately deported. The plan is to send him back to Australia today, although I don't know the details, he said. Payne was originally charged with heroin trafficking, which carries a death penalty in Indonesia, but the charge was later downgraded after doctors testified he was a former drug addict who had banned narcotics only for personal use. And while we're thinking about people like the Barley 9 and Chappelle Corby, who has slipped from the public consciousness, unfortunately. Poor Chappelle, she's still there, still rotting away in Kerabakan jail. The poor darling. And it really, it must be an absolutely horrific existence there. And we were all over here feeling really sorry for poor Chappelle, as we should, as we should. And we could all understand how some strange smuggling ring using Australian airports could have slipped, tried to smuggle some 4.2 kg of cannabis in her boogie board bag colour. We can all understand that. But there was almost no uproar back in, when was it, 1992, when a group of Japanese tourists were arrested. Five of them were arrested at Melbourne Airport. They all had identical suitcases and they all had false bottoms and they were full of heroin. And they were all in prison for an enormous amount of time. A Japanese tourist imprisoned for smuggling heroin into Australia in 1992 has returned to Japan for the first time in 14 years. That's how long we kept the last of them. 14 years in an Australian jail, despite the fact that he continually and consistently claimed he was set up and that it was planned on him. The man, 47, is one of five convicted Japanese tourists who were arrested in possession of 13 kilograms of heroin when they arrived at Melbourne Airport in June 92, flying from Kuala Lumpur. The 14 years of imprisonment was too long for me. When I saw Mount Fuji from the airplane, I was so excited and happy, the man who requested anonymity told a news conference at Narita Airport on arrival in Japan. The man, whom an Australian court concluded was the mastermind, was sentenced to 20 years in prison. He did 14, while the four others were sentenced to 15 years each. They all did 10. The four were released and returned to Japan in November 2002. The five have insisted they were set up as traffickers, saying they had their suitcases stolen in Malaysia while they were in a restaurant in Kuala Lumpur on the way to Australia. The five have maintained that the suitcases were given back to them by a local tour guide containing heroin when they got them, apparently. Their lawyers said that they were wrongly convicted due to incorrect translation during police questioning and court hearings. We've touched on that story a bit earlier on, particularly one of the four that went back earlier, who was a young woman of absolutely impeccable character, and it was quite unbelievable that she could have ever been involved in anything at all like that. Her boss had given her this ticket to Australia, and which had been given to him by some dodgy underworld figure that had owed him favours, and he'd given him this ticket for someone to go to Australia and so forth, all under this one tour guide operation. That's how they all ended up, just travelling in with these brand new suitcases given to them by the company, and boom, boom. 10 and 15 or 14 years in an Australian prison. Oh joy, oh joy. It's about 8 minutes before 2 o'clock. Nimbin Aboriginal Broadcast is here at 2 o'clock. Right now we'll have a little bit of macrame. Young lady from Adelaide. Check this out. Joy there from Necromantics, a beautiful little track there, called Hyperbolic Logic. And it's about 3 minutes before 2 o'clock. Nimbin Aboriginal Broadcasters, like I said earlier, coming to you at 2 o'clock. JB may be a little late, but he's left you some solid Indigenous music to rock you on until he can finally manage to slip in here. he's got a few other situations on the boil right now. And a final quick story, and it's not necessarily about cannabis, and it's not necessarily about any particular drugs in general, but it's just a taste of the vibe that's emanating from our new Americanized parliamentary house down there in Canberra. God, the longer that John is in America, the more righteous, that's the word I like to use, righteous, on the side of the right, on the righteous goodness that's emanating out of Canberra. Here we go. Attorney General Philip Ruddock, snivelling Phil to his friends, says he may strengthen the government's sedition laws after the Australian Federal Police said it could not act on controversial texts in Muslim bookshops. The AFP and the Commonwealth Director of Public Prosecutions, the DPP, have ruled that a number of books found in Sydney bookstores late last year did not incite violence. One of the books, Defence of the Muslim Lands, carried an endorsement from Al-Qaeda chief Osama bin Laden on its back cover and promoted wiring up one's body with explosives. The finding by the AFP and the DPP have raised questions over the toughness of federal sedition laws, which makes it an offence to urge others to overthrow the government or urge violence against other groups. Mr. Ruddock said he had asked the DPP to re-examine the matter and had some sympathy with the British model, which made it an offence to, quote, glorify violence. Gee, that'll throw Hollywood into a disarray, won't it? Such as suicide bombing. Quote, glorification or advancing that this is an appropriate behaviour for people to engage in is a step further than the Australian sedition laws, Mr. Ruddock told Macquarie Radio. We didn't go that far at the time, but it may be a matter that we've got to look at further, given that we now know that these publications and what they're saying don't seem to be regarded by the police as constituting an act of urging violence against other groups in our community. So Phil's going to keep on strengthening the laws. If he decides that something's bad and the police won't prosecute it, he'll just keep changing those laws until eventually they have to, because it's just such an obvious crime. There you go. It's publications in Muslim bookshops today. What'll it be? Publications in alternative bookshops tomorrow? And then maybe people who look like they follow those alternative bookshop beliefs, perhaps, will start to attract a bit more attention. Anyway, it's 2:00. It's time that I slipped quietly away. It's been a delight being with you all by myself. Live, white and naked, I can finally get dressed and get out into the sun and get a bit of body temperature back in again. It's lonely up here, I tell you. Hopefully the boys, well, Michael at least, will be back next Friday, home from CDAT with all the latest news of what the Community Drug and Alcohol Action Team have decided to do with you all. And Gerald, I believe, will be back from wherever he is right now. Anyway, it's been a real little treasure being with you. Look after yourselves. Have one for me.